I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE, or go to timesharejesse.com. Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out. What is happening in Minneapolis, and why is it happening? Donald Trump and Twitter, a war for the ages, and finally, something that has happened to all of us, and I feel bad for him. All that's coming up right now on I'm Right. I feel like I view the world differently than other people. And I know what you're sitting there thinking, well, Jesse, that's because you're smarter than everyone else. A lot of that's true. I mean, that's why everyone calls me Jesse the Oracle Kelly now. But what I find to be really, really, really strange is America's views on racism. And understand this. This constant racial tension we have here, that is kind of a uniquely American thing. I've talked to people like the first contributor, Sydney Watson. She gets on and she talks about how Americans view race very differently than Australians, because she's Australian. I've talked to my buddy in Britain, and he says Americans view race very differently. We don't argue about it in that way. And here's the truth of the matter. People all hold some sort of prejudice. Racism is not a uniquely American invention. Countries have been racist throughout the history of the world, always have been, always will be, because it's human nature to have some kind of prejudice. I'm better than that guy. We're better than them. Well, they're dumb. Well, I hate them. It's just human nature. It's how our minds work. It's part of our flaws. I mean, if for you who have flaws, I wouldn't know what that's like. But here's the deal. Americans are so obsessed with racism for a variety of different reasons that they try to assign it to everything. But here's the problem. When you assign something to everything, you water down the word. Let's say you really believe, and it may be true, let's say you really believe there is still systematic racism in the United States of America. Does it help that cause to point at each and every incident between a white guy and a black guy and say, that's racism? Well, no. Now you water down the cause. Now when the next time somebody hears the word racism, you know what they do? Okay, here we go again. That's what they do. And if you do care that much about it, shouldn't you treat the word with more care? Shouldn't you? We have that horrible video out of Minneapolis. I have chosen not to show it to you. It's ugly. It's easily accessible if you have a desire to see it. I know so many of you watch this show with your kids. It's ugly. And it's not one of these short-clipped cop videos. You can't see what goes on. There's a reason you've never heard me really address a cop video on this show, because I don't know what happened. I don't know the context. It's not long enough. This one's very much long enough. A cop sits there with his knee on the back of the guy's neck until he dies, and you watch it, and it's awful. It's murder. On top of bad police work and everything else, it's murder. And immediately, without a moment's hesitation, it seems like the whole of the country decided this was a racist incident. It could have been. For all I know, for all you know, this guy could be the Grand Wizard of the KKK. But also, keep in mind, For all you and I know, this guy might be married to a black woman and have 20 black kids. Everybody, all of his friends might be, but we don't know that part of it. What we do know is that's murder. That's what we do know. So why this effort to instantly make it about race? I don't understand it. I guess my mind just works differently. I'll never get that. We can find out if it's about race and dig into it there. But why do we have to automatically assign it to that every single time? And I'll tell you something else that's going to upset you. This isn't just a problem on the left. Oh, don't get me wrong. The normal race hustlers like Al Sharpton are all over it. He sent out a message on social media today first thing. I'm on my way to Minneapolis. Woo-hoo-hoo! He's living high on the hog. But this is a problem on the right, too. You see, we have people on the left, you know, like known race hoaxers like LeBron James. They're, of course, going to act like they're the civil rights leaders during this time. I'm standing for you. Just like the time I got racist graffiti on my gate and then somebody erased it before the cops showed up. But people on the right do this thing because they've been accused of racism for so long and they're so beaten down by it and they're so anxious to prove somebody wrong. As soon as something like this comes out, we get the, this is, we have to stop this racism. This is racism. Nobody even questioned this race. Whoa, whoa. We don't know that. It certainly could be. We don't know that. And when I pose the question to my friends on the right who stand up and scream racism right off the bat, you know what I get? Well, can't you see? Well, yeah, I can see. I don't know what's inside of his head. Do we have some old Facebook posts or something like that? Do we have any indication? Well, it's obvious. Okay, screaming it's obvious at me does not prove something to me. Show me. Show me. And here's the issue with it. Everything I just talked about, the race hoaxers like LeBron and Sharpton, the people on the right trying to be very, very not racist. What's happening right now in Minneapolis is partially your fault. It's partially your fault. We had the president who was all over the case. The president of the United States was all over the police and justice. Puts out a tweet saying, quote, at my request, the FBI and the Department of Justice are already well into an investigation as to the very sad and tragic death in Minnesota of George Floyd. I have asked for this investigation to be expedited and greatly appreciate all the work done by local law enforcement. My heart goes out to George's family and friends. Justice will be served. Okay, that's wonderful. That is wonderful. He was all over the incident itself. We were going to get the information. These cops weren't going to get off scot-free when the prez himself is putting it out there. We're not getting off scot-free. We were going to dig into this and get justice. But no, we couldn't just do that, could we? We had to throw our racism flags up and racism, we're going to stop racism. America's racist, the cops are racist, race. And now, look at what's happening in Minneapolis. That is not some third world dump that was just bombed out that you're looking at. That's happening right now. In the United States of America, that's happening right now. Once they were done there, they decided to go shopping at Target as well. Have you seen what they've done to this Target? Look at that. In the United States of America, and breathe it in. Don't turn it off. Breathe that in. If you're one of these people who spent the last 24 hours talking about racism and racism, we got racism and race, everything's racism, it's clearly racist, you own part of that. Part of that is on you. Stop revving up the race card every single chance you get. We can deal with injustice. We can deal with injustice by law enforcement without whipping people into a race frenzy. How long is it going to take us in this country to learn that lesson? I'm not saying this wasn't a racist incident. I have no idea. But neither do you. Neither does anyone else. We don't know anything race-related as of this moment when it comes to these cops. Now think about the loss of life and property damage we already have based on what might be a lie, based on something that's quite possibly not even true. Does that seem right to you? It's not right. It's not. And now we have a major U.S. city, a once beautiful U.S. city. I was back there about 20 years ago. We have it turned into an absolute war zone. These guys, they're just standing up trying to guard some stuff.
cops are a lot less likely to try and tread on people's rights when there's other armed Americans with them. So we figured it's about damn time that some, or at least I figure that it's about damn time some heavily armed rednecks stood with fellow citizens.
And why are you protecting this store?
Well, I mean, this wasn't exactly a specified action.
We've been kind of ended up here.
We've been moving around and just trying to see what's what without getting necessarily completely slapped by massive groups of people. And while we were walking, somebody mentioned that there were some guys at the back of us. Actually, wanted to know if they were over here to buy something. And they said that they're closed and they're defending their businesses. Oh yeah, Target's on fire.
Yep.
By the way.
Yeah.
But and anyway, so we heard that. We're like, well, we better kit up and go see if these guys need help. And turns out, these guys are out here with machetes and shattered windows trying to keep looters out of the business because cops can't get in here. And so, you know, I figure, before they were cops, they were just Americans. So here we are.
Or, you know, during the L.A. riots.
Or during the L.A. riots. Collateral damage, I guess.
Everyone protecting their own stuff. That's where, you know, you got the term rooftop Korean.
So bottom line, justice for Floyd, and I hope they stop looting at some point. If there were more of us, we could go stop them from looting, but it's just us four.
We definitely don't agree with the looting.
Yeah, no looting.
But we do
looting
agree with the cause for the protest.
Yeah, definite protest.
Hope everybody stays safe out there. What are we doing? Oh, and look at the aftermath. Look at this. And again, I want you to take this in. That's in America. That almost looks like something you'd see on one of those apocalyptic movies people watch these days. You half expect zombies to come walking down that road. That's right here in the United States of America. Maybe the way we've addressed race for the past 40, 50 years, definitely in the recent decades, maybe it's time we changed course. All of that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. Now, you need a good night's sleep tonight. I know you do. I can see it in your eyes. I actually can't see it in your eyes, but I know I do. I know I do every single night. How do you think I show up here and perform like a champion every single day? I sleep. Get an ebb sleep. It's not pills. Stop taking pills. It's a wearable device that applies precise continuous cooling to your forehead area, which puts you asleep faster and keeps you asleep. Go to tryebb.com/Jesse. That's tryebb.com/Jesse. Buy one. Do not forget, though. Don't forget to use the promo code Jesse at checkout. Gets you $25 off. Stop dreaming about it. Stop reaching for the sleeping pills. Go get an Ebb Sleep. All right. We'll be back. I know you look to me for guidance, and why wouldn't you? I mean, let's be honest. But I'm about to give you the most wishy-washy answer on something I've ever given anyone on anything. Censorship. Censorship of social media. Here is the deal. I know you may be older. Maybe you're not on, you know, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all these other things. But understand this. One, it's fine if you're not. It's probably preferable if you're not. Two, you can get to an age where you just decide you're not doing anything else, and I appreciate that so much because I'm already getting to that point myself. But three, you also need to understand they're humongous. They are humongous. Twitter alone, even if you don't have it, world leaders have it. The President of the United States of America has it, uses it, reads it. At this point in time, you can contact the President of the United States of America, and there's actually a chance he reads it. Did you know that? Isn't that wild? At what other point in American history would you personally be able to reach out to the President? Your senators, your congressmen, your mayors, your governors, they're on there. They read it. It is a powerful, powerful thing. And the President loves to use it. A lot of people dislike how he uses it, but he's all over it all the time. He believes it's a powerful thing. But here's the problem. They're not on your side. And I'm on all of them too. But most of the people who run these social media sites are not necessarily on your side. Many of them are card-carrying leftists. They're actively working against you. And what is one of the main tenets of leftism? Censorship. It is. One of the first things they start doing at any totalitarian regime is get rid of all the smart people who can read. Start burning the books. Why do you think book burning is such a big thing in totalitarian regimes? Because they don't want you to hear anything except what they say. A leftist's very nature is control. You could say the sky is green. This person says the sky is red. A leftist just wants you both to shut up and be silenced forever. The point of the matter is leftists can't help themselves when they're in control of something like Twitter. They have to censor it. They have to. It's their very nature. Even when they try to hold back, because they have tried to hold back on it. They've tried to hold themselves back on it. I know this for a fact because they don't want the government to come in and hammer them and regulate them. But even when they try to hold themselves back on it, they just can't quite do it. And so Donald Trump puts out this tweet about mail-in ballots. Quote, "There is no way, zero, that mail-in ballots will be anything less than substantially fraudulent. Mailboxes will be robbed, ballots will be forged, and even illegally printed out and fraudulently signed. The governor of California is sending ballots to millions of people. Anyone living in the state, no matter who they are or how they got there, will get one. That will be followed up with professionals telling all these people, many of whom never even thought of voting before, how and for whom to vote. This will be a rigged election. No way." End quote. And here is the problem. Twitter read that, and Twitter decided to put a gigantic disclaimer on that. Well, Trump responded. Trump responded with an executive order going after these companies, regulating these companies. Now, first of all, for Twitter, setting all politics aside, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? You can't take a shot at the president of the United States of America and not expect a reaction. Are you that stupid? Especially when you don't do it to anyone else. It would take you 5 seconds if you got on Twitter to find mega, mega, mega powerful people that said blatantly false things that have never had that disclaimer slapped on. So when you do that, you look like you're singling him out. What do you think's going to happen when you single out the most powerful man in the world? You absolute morons. Of course you're going to get an executive order. What did you think? Play stupid games, get stupid prizes, as the saying goes. But here's my wishy-washy part. I can't decide if I like the executive order. Look, I hate executive orders in general. I hate government in general. Really, pretty much all of it sucks. I realize that puts me far to the right of pretty much everyone on the planet, but if I had my way, if I were king for a day, I would eliminate virtually every government agency, every single one. The government budget, that one that we're running, you know, $4 trillion deficit this year, yeah, we'd be running a surplus every year. It would just be slash and burn, baby. I would be burning the whole daggone thing down. So I admit I'm a little different. So I don't want a new regulation, and I definitely don't want a new regulation from the president on a social media company. Why? Well, it's because I'm worried about a Democrat president taking over and then deciding, well, then I'm going to regulate them the way I want to regulate them. You see, everything's precedent. As soon as you give government the power to do something you love, you give them that same power. You give your enemies that same power to come back at you. Always remember this. Always remember this. Whenever you try to give government anything, any authority at all, I want you to picture Nancy Pelosi. Any authority you want to give Donald Trump or your favorite senator or your favorite congressman, what you're really saying is, I want Nancy Pelosi to have that same authority one day. Now, let me ask you, do you want Nancy Pelosi to be in charge of regulating Twitter one day? Do you think that's a good idea? Of course not. So, that's my one side of the argument. My other side of the argument is this. How do we play offense then? It's a reasonable question. Think about what we don't have in the United States of America if you're somebody on the right. Here's what you don't have. You turn on the news at night. Anytime you're not watching the First or a couple other channels, and what do you see? A leftist point of view. You turn off the news, you turn on the local sitcom, what do you see? A leftist point of view. I can't take this anymore. You turn on the most recent Hollywood movie, what do you see? A leftist point of view. You send your kids off to public school, oh, it's just kindergarten, what do they come home with? A leftist point of view. They finally graduate high school, Lord willing, and you send them off to college, and what do they get? A leftist point of view. You go to the government workers, what do they all have? 95% of them, a leftist point of view. Are you catching on here? The leftists have taken over every single part of our society, slowly over time. Government has only grown for the last 100 years, and leftists have taken this, and leftists have taken that, and leftists have taken that, and leftists have taken that. My problem is, I don't want the president regulating Twitter, but I don't know if I can stand for giving them something else without fighting back. How long do we on the right have to do the, well, look, I'm just not free to do anything about it thing? I've had about enough of that. I would like some W's for our team now and then. So, no, I actually don't like the president regulating social media. But, and this is a big but I kind of do. Mark Zuckerberg, head of Facebook, said this.
We have a different policy, I think, than Twitter on this. You know, I just believe strongly that that Facebook shouldn't be the arbiter of truth of everything that people say online. I think in general, private companies probably shouldn't be, or especially these platform companies, shouldn't be in the position of doing that.
Yeah, that's the smart move. That is a smart move, and I think he's probably being a little crafty there. He's smarter than the idiots at Twitter. Yeah, we probably shouldn't openly campaign against the president. Not smart. Nancy Pelosi, she thinks Mark Zuckerberg's now a card-carrying conservative.
So they pander to the White House. You see what Facebook Zuckerberg is saying today about all of this. They just panders. Tax cuts, no regulation. Our business model is to misrepresent the facts and to be a platform to do that and try to hide under freedom of speech, which is, of course, a complete violation of everything freedom of speech stands for. What the president is doing is it's almost seeing people who have been in cahoots with each other. You know, is there no honor among thieves? That's really kind of what it comes down to. They've all exploited the truce. And some have made money off of it, and some have made political capital off of their misrepresentations. But what the president is doing is silly. It's silly. But let's say this. It's a distraction. I opened this meeting talking about testing, how it's going to save lives, open our economy, send our kids back to school, save lives, and the rest. We're talking about Twitter.
It's really hard to listen to her anymore. What is with this thing all the time? And everybody knows. It's really weird. All right, we got Pete Hegseth. Hang on. Joining me now, co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend, obviously author of the new great book, You Need to Go Get, American Crusade, Our Fight to Stay Free, Pete Hegseth, and obviously combat veteran. I can't leave that out. Pete, you were all over this New Jersey thing last week, and I think people got a little confused with what they saw. Everyone saw the video the one day the cop shows up, says, hey, we're not enforcing it, have a good day, crowd cheers, America, baby. And then all of a sudden, the next thing we know, some guy's getting thrown in handcuffs. What happened?
Yeah, they're waiting for the cameras to leave. That's what happens every single time. And we couldn't be out there every day. Thankfully, a Fox affiliate out of Philly was for most of the days after that. Yeah, they wait. They gave one good moment from the local police. Then they issued him a summons. Then the next day, they started taking the names of every customer of the gym. So they're trying to intimidate the customers to hit Frank and Ian, the guys that run it. And then one wouldn't give his name, so they cuffed the guy. Then the days that follow, they kept the gym open, and they would follow customers away from the TV cameras and then pull them over a block or two down the road and issue them a citation. Then they were given a health citation, even though no one had inspected the facility. And ultimately what happened is the Friday before Memorial Day, Governor Murphy had the health department changed the locks of the gym. They didn't just padlock it. They changed the locks of a private gym so they could not get into their own gym, citing a health violation. The gym is now locked, but they are fighting. They brought a lawsuit against Governor Murphy and in federal court. I've been talking to their lawyer today. They're hoping for some resolution in a week or so, but in the meantime, they're shut down. And I was inside that gym. These guys are doing it better than any of these big box stores are doing as far as you know, managing health and all that stuff. It's exactly how the left works. They wait for the cameras to turn off. They use intimidation. They use any inspector or government department they can to shut you down. But they're not backing down. It's cool to see them at least fighting back.
Well, I was in a gym myself one time, Pete. Now, I am worried. I'm a little bit worried about the reputation of law enforcement in America. And I'm really worried about it, not just from this crap we see in Minneapolis, which, I mean, there's no excuse for that, but forcing police officers, or you could say them making the choice to enforce orders like this. I'm worried it's going to negatively affect the public's relationship with law enforcement big time, and law enforcement relies on that. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. I hope not. I mean, I know for certain that half the guys that were there as law enforcement were members of the gym. Like, they know these guys. And Frank and Ian were super respectful of them. They didn't want to be there. They didn't want to be doing this. And I, to the credit of the gym owners, they fought really hard to make sure the crowd there was respectful of the police and saying, this is not the police. This is not the police that wants to do this. This is Democrat Governor Murphy and the other minions who want to maintain their power and control. We'll see how this plays out even more, how long it goes on and how that changes the perception of police. Should some of them be, I'm sure there's plenty, a number of them that said, we don't want any part of it. Ultimately though, they've got jobs and lives and families and they've got directives and they're just doing their job as they see it. It's a really tough spot for them.
A very tough spot. And now everybody has a cell phone camera out there catching your worst moment on camera all the time. It's a disaster. All right, Pete, what's this book about, American Crusade? I obviously know. Tell everybody else.
You are a crusader, Jesse. That much I know. It is meant to motivate people, seriously, to go to the next level, to be unafraid, to be unapologetic, and to follow the path our president has charted with the way he takes on the left, exposes the left, calls them out, dismisses political correctness, exposes the media. But it makes the case, obviously, that 2020 is critically important, especially considering what the left has tried to do to the president and his supporters and everything. But it goes deeper in that an election cycle win is extremely important, but where we've been losing to the left is in our culture, in our schoolrooms, in our education, in our universities. But I want to wake people up to the depth of betrayal of the left, who they really are, how they've done it. One of my colleagues at Fox called it the decoder key of the left, and I kind of liked that. It's like, this is who they are. They're not your daddy's Democrats. They're not JFK, you know, tax-cutting, pro-life, anti-communist. They're not the loyal opposition anymore. They are our opponents to be crushed, and if we don't crush them, we will lose our country. So I chose Crusade intentionally, and our fight to stay free was the subtitle, and I wrote it before COVID-19, and here we are fighting to stay free. The left will take every moment they can to take away our freedoms and gain more control. And I want it to be a wake-up call, but ultimately inspiring for people.
Pete, you're obviously a combat veteran, so this makes probably more sense to you than it does a lot of people. But I think a lot of people, especially on the right, are uncomfortable, or at least have been uncomfortable with that thought that it's our job to take down the left. And I get people who are uncomfortable with that. Now, that's music to my ears, but it makes people uncomfortable. Will you explain to them why that's necessary? It's not just that, well, I mean, they got a little what they want and we got a little what we want. It can't be that way. Why?
Those days are gone because leftism is the opposite of Americanism. It is the opposite of free people, individual liberty, personal responsibility, equal justice, citizenship. They have rejected that America is a good country, that America is founded on ideals that are worth perpetuating. And you can't negotiate with someone that wants to kill you. And again, people will say, oh, it's a call to arms. That's not what I'm talking about yet, at least. You know, we have a Second Amendment for a reason. What I'm saying is you have to crush the left politically, culturally, in our schoolrooms, and only through crushing them and defeating them do you have a chance to create the space to return to the values that have always made America prosperous and free. And Donald Trump showed us how to do that. You know what? I liken it to, you know this as a vet as well, It's what's the most dangerous kind of ambush? An L-shaped near ambush, right? Where you're stuck, the enemy's right on top of you, you got nowhere to go, and you're in the kill zone. What Republicans have done for years and years and years is sit in the kill zone as the left just shoots at us and sort of try to explain ourselves and apologize, and can't we just work together, and maybe just a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that. And Donald Trump threw the playbook out, and he said, no, what you're supposed to do when you're stuck in a near ambush is charge and assault toward the enemy. It's your only hope to survive. And when he did that and showed us all how to do that, what that does is if you get close enough to the enemy position, what do they have to do? They have to jump out of the tall grass and expose their position. And at this point, the left has fully exposed themselves for the anti-Americans that they are, for the socialists that they are, for the godless Marxists that they are. And when you do that, you get a chance to show the contrast. And that was my wake-up call with Trump. I talk about my Trump conversion moment, how he's the see something, say something president. I talk about growing a Trump spine, which a lot of us have. I mean, you've always had it. You've always been willing to call them out the way that they need to be. But a lot of us have learned that from him. And if that's why they hate him so much, he's the first leader we've ever had, America first leader, who fights them, you know, harder than they fight us, and they can't stand that. And so we got a chance to survive because he's charged into that near ambush. But now it's up to us to follow the lead in any quarter we can have that impact. And it's hard to say. You don't want to say that the American left in our country it needs to be defeated, because you have this residual idea of yesteryear, you know, Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, and they work together, and everyone wants to wish we were there. That's just not where we are today. We have to defeat them politically and in our culture, or we will lose our country, as you know.
Pete, lastly, piggybacking off what you just said, I am worried about this. I'm worried about Donald Trump's presidency ending. Let's hope it's in 2024. And the GOP, instead of learning what you just described, that they have to fight back, that they have to be aggressive, I'm worried about the GOP, all these old guard types saying, whew, that's finally over. Now we can go back to just being the actual pissing post of the left. That's what I'm worried about.
I like that. I am too. There will 2024, provided the president gets reelected, will be a watershed moment. It will be, because you're going to have a bunch of people running to try to be like Trump, some of which will be authentic in that, others will not. And then you'll have the group of the party that's saying, no, we need to reject him. And it'll be on folks like us that see that he actually did what he said he was going to do and was willing to fight to try to hold the line. I mean, it's coming, right? They're waiting right now. They know they're irrelevant. They don't have a constituency. He's got this 95, 96% approval rating amongst Republicans. It's going to be tough for them if he maintains that and continues to follow. Let's say we have a 7-2 Supreme Court. Let's say we've got, 800 miles of border wall, and we've got, 200, 300, 400 federal judges on the bench that will outlive his administration. That's a massive, massive legacy to try to tear down. So I think it'll get harder for them in a second term, but they're going to try. Of course they're going to try. We know who the establishment types. I used to be one. I know how these people think and the way they loathe the way in which he fights. We know it's always a fight. There's never a moment when there's a coronation of agreement. There's some really bad ideas out there that even within the Republican Party that are going to have to be beaten back again.
Should be noted, I do not remember a time when Pete Hegseth was ever an establishment type, but you've seen him on Fox and Friends Weekend. Go buy the book, American Crusade. Pete, I appreciate you, brother.
Jesse, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right. We got more. Hang on. Joining us now, columnist for the Washington Examiner and contributor right here at the First, Tiana Lowe. Tiana, we have about 9 million things to unpack with you today, so let us begin at the beginning. Minneapolis is burning down. It's pretty much the worst situation imaginable, and here's my issue with it. We saw that murder on tape. Everybody saw it. Everyone can clearly see exactly what happened. That's murder. All right. That's a cop who killed someone. That cop is not currently under arrest. By my understanding, up to this point in time, he's not even being charged. That is the glaring issue in this entire thing, and everybody wants to scream racism right now. We don't know that. We don't even know if the guy's racist, but we do know he killed somebody. What is this American obsession with racism instead of the crime I can see on videotape?
I do think that there is this general feeling that because the Black Lives Matter movement was essentially hijacked, you know, it did come from, you look at the cases of Philando Castile, there were a lot of valid grievances. The issue is that then it became sort of obsessed with this Michael Brown farce. And also this assumption that because there are individual racist cops who do get away with it, in large part because of legal precedents that predated the Black Lives Matter movement, the sense is that because of these individual racist cops, the system itself is racist. This was a conflation that was very politically alienating, and it's why conservatives did reject the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think now there are a lot of conservatives realizing qualified immunity for police is wrong. And yes, there is a problem with police accountability where they get the benefit of the doubt in using the law. That is not the same thing as saying across the board, this is some systemic problem relating to the intent of the law. Now, in this case, as you said, this was clearly a murder, and race seems like it's a possible qualifying factor. Last I read, one of the cops involved had 17 complaints against him, only one that was dismissed with any sort of punitive action. So clearly there's a problem in the Minneapolis Police Department. But if you're looking at these stores being burned to the ground and being completely pillaged, that is not what justice looks like. What justice looks like is that these cops have their day in court.
Tiana, I feel like Minneapolis is just this gigantic thing we can't really touch for a lot of different reasons, but it's this huge socioeconomic experiment we can dig into. I was in Minneapolis 20 years ago. Heck, you were probably barely alive at that point in time, and it was a beautiful city. It was cool. The Mall of America was this destination spot, and now I have so many friends up there, and they say it is an absolute war zone when it's not being looted after something like this. What exactly happened to Minneapolis?
So Minneapolis, even though it's in what is technically one of the last bipartisan states in the country because it does have a split legislature, Minneapolis is, depending on what area of the city you're in, it's a D plus 30 something, 40 something district. It is all blue. That has created a lot of incentive problems. It has made it really difficult for small businesses to operate. I don't know as much about the city government as anyone who's ever lived there. I do know that I have reported there. You know, it's home to the number one terror recruitment district in the country. It is not a very assimilated city, which is a problem. You know, I'm from Los Angeles, where we have tons of immigrants. And quite frankly, you know, I know that there are problems with racism everywhere, but it feels like we have really celebrated and accepted diversity of all kinds. You know, like we have a little Tokyo, and we have the largest diaspora of Vietnamese immigrants outside of Vietnam, and we celebrate Latino culture. When I went to Minneapolis, it felt very stratified. You have these enclaves where there's very little assimilation of any kind. I think all of that just makes it a melting pot for this racial resentment. You cannot have everyone living separately and expect it to end well.
To ask you the most impossible question in the world, why? Because you're 100% right. Been to LA several times. It is completely diverse. There's people everywhere, but it doesn't feel tense. I mean, obviously, they've had some serious moments of tension in the past, but Minneapolis, everyone talks about how they're not assimilated. Let's be frank here. Is this a Somali culture problem? Because that's where so many, they imported, I believe 57,000 settled in one area. And look, it's not outrageous to say perhaps they're not meshing well with the other residents of Minneapolis. Or is that outrageous to say?
So I think that there's like a little bit of nuance here. On the one hand, a lot of housing codes that tend to exist in democratic areas do not encourage assimilation. If you have one set of projects for one diaspora and another set of projects for another, then of course you're going to expect people to stick with what they know. On the other hand, obviously not all immigrant cultures come with the same level of liberalism. You know, there's a reason why you can import millions of South Koreans and it's glossed over pretty easily and they're assimilated into America very well. There's a reason why Iranians who come here mesh very well with American culture. Somali immigrants, my experiences, and I'm not gonna speak to the culture at large, my experience in the Somali diaspora in Minneapolis was that there was a huge level of gender discrimination. A couple of the restaurants I went into, there were no women. When I was with one local, I was asked if I wanted to go into a room in the back, which is where all the women went. that sort of attitude does not lend itself well to Western liberalism. And it doesn't make it easy for especially women in that community to assimilate outwards.
Tiana, we are going to change gears, and I think we're going to have a big fight right here on camera. Donald Trump and this regulating Twitter thing. Now, obviously, you have a pretty good idea of where I stand on things like that. I hear anybody in government wants to regulate anything, I'm immediately completely against it. I want small government. I want hands off, because I know there's going to be a Democrat president again one day, sadly, and they're going to abuse whatever power we use now. That said, how do we play offense? Tiana, it's not, as soon as I hear, I don't want you to regulate Twitter in a vacuum, I completely agree. But when I look and I see they own all the school system, they own all the government employees, they apparently own the federal law enforcement, they certainly own Hollywood, they own all these significant parts of our culture, are we just supposed to cede yet another part without coming back? You are the ultimate freedom person. Explain it to me.
I think that in so much of this conversation about who is winning, we're so locked in this box of immediacy, we're forgetting, I think we are the ones who are winning. If you just look at the public opinion shift on China since Trump has become president, we've gone about from 50% approval rating of China to one in every three Americans having a negative opinion of China, with one in five calling it an outright enemy. We are winning in the sense that, think about the way that we consumed the news 20 years ago. It was whatever the New York Times said was the news. Now, you can hop on Twitter, follow individual reporters, follow individual commentators. You know, Trump's minions work, comfortably smug tweets for everyone to go vote in a poll, and they do. I do think that this is the beginning of the conservatives turning the tide on the culture war. Now, where Trump really has been good in his focus, reportedly his administration is considering canceling some student visas to Chinese students who have been active in the Chinese military or Chinese intelligence. That's a great call, by all means. I think something where the libertarian wing of the Republican Party and the more national conservative wing of the Republican Party really can join forces is against China. I don't hear many libertarians saying, let's not punish China in the World Trade Organization. Let's not punish China's intellectual property theft. Everyone's on board with this. The focus on Twitter is so myopic. So few Americans use Twitter actively, let alone for their political information. And those who do are seeing more diversity in news than anyone else. The natural consequence, if Trump's executive order did go through, which it won't because large parts of it are unconstitutional, would basically be that every single website would remove any sort of comment section or any sort of unvetted publication of information. Who would that empower? The New York Times, the people who already have the big audiences. It would precisely be the masses that would be silenced. And that's the reason why I really think the conservatives should think a little bit further into the future. When you have President AOC, do you want her to be able to tell Twitter to police hate speech, whatever hate speech means? Because that's what would happen.
Well, let's be honest, President AOC would be absolutely hilarious.
At the very least, we can all laugh on our way to the graves.
Tiana Lowe, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right. Something that has happened to all of us. I'll explain. Hang on. Who among us can forget the famous, famous Eric Swalwell interview when he finally just stopped holding back and let it unleash?
The evidence is uncontradicted that the president used taxpayer dollars to ask the Ukrainians to help him cheat an election. And the complaint that I've heard from...
Everybody remembers that. It was one of the greatest moments in TV history. Well, Vice President Biden found himself in a bit of a pickle yesterday. Now, I'm probably going to play this for you for a couple times because I want you to see something first. First of all, go ahead and play it.
Okay. Or stop work on roads and bridges. So, what does the human cost?
Or stop work on roads and bridges. So, what does the human cost?
Now, I want you to play it again, but hold up, hold up. I feel bad for Joe Biden. It's not just because he pounded one on national TV. That's embarrassing. I feel bad for Joe Biden because you could actually see at the very beginning of the video, he did that thing that's happened to all of us at least once before. You know what I'm talking about. Maybe you're on a date. Maybe you're in class. Maybe you're on an airplane or something like that. Maybe you're at the dinner table. I don't know. But he tried to do that thing where you could tell he was holding it back, and then he gets this look in his eyes, this look of anguish. And he knows, oh, man, that hurts. And then you can see it come over his face when he realizes it's coming. And that's the look of fear. And I felt bad for him in this moment. Watch again.
Programs. Or stop work on roads and bridges. So what does the human cost?
Or stop work on roads and bridges. So what does the human cost?
We've all been there. Sorry, Joe. All right. See you tomorrow. You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint, your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own three of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get two. Be like me and get three. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.